This talk will actually be a little more general than the title suggests. It's based on this paper that I wrote over the summer, as well as some ongoing work. Okay, so this is sort of the top-down slide, right? So in recent years, many people have suggested that that space-time emerges from the entanglement of some pre-geometric as yet undefined degrees of freedom. Basically, all the precise formulations of this statement that we have come from ADS CFT, where we have the Ryutaki-Nagi formula, which says that given a region B in the boundaries in a state of our boundary CFT, the entanglement entropy is the area of the bulk surface of the minimal area that's homologous to that region. And this reduces to the Bekenstein-Hawking formula in ADS in select cases. So the program so far has basically been that by massaging this formula, people derive various nice results in ADS CFT. And two of them that I'll now review quickly on one slide apiece are this derivation of the Einstein equations around vacuum ADS from the entanglement first law and entanglement wedge reconstruction. Okay, so these are, I think, the old results that are the highlights of the program so far. Right. So around the ADS vacuum, the linearized Einstein equations were shown to be dual to the entanglement first law for ball-shaped regions in the CFT. Right. This was shown by Mark van Remsdonk and collaborators in 2013. So this equation on top here is the entanglement first law. It says that the change in the entanglement entropy across any subregion is equal to the change in the expectation value of the modular Hamiltonian for that region as one perturbs about a state, where the modular Hamiltonian is the log of the reduced density operator in that state. So this equation is true for all quantum systems. It's basically just first-order perturbation theory. For a generic state and a subregion, we don't know the modular Hamiltonian in closed form. But for a ball-shaped region in the vacuum state of a CFT, we do. It's a weighted integral of the CFT stress tensor over the ball, basically because the domain of dependence of the ball is conformal to the Rindler wedge. So Mark's idea was just to translate this equation to holography by mapping both sides of the equation into the bulk. So the bulk dual of the change of the in the entanglement is the change in the area of the Ryutaki-Nagi surface, which at leading order is an integral of a functional of the metric fluctuation over the Ryutaki-Nagi surface for a given bulk. The bulk dual of the modular Hamiltonian is the change in a weighted integral of the metric fluctuation along boundary region B. So in short, we get one non-local bulk equation constraining the fluctuations of the bulk metric for every point in the bulk, right? Where the equation corresponding to a point in the bulk is that of the boundary circle where the tip of the Ryutaki-Nagi surface passes through the point. By massaging these equations, one can invert them to get the linearized Einstein equations at every point. So. An obvious question that this raises, and kind of the reason I'm reviewing it, is that right, we would like to know whether we can repeat this argument to derive the Einstein equations around asymptotically ADS geometries dual to states elsewhere in the Hilbert space of the holographic CFT. So I'll come back to this shortly. Okay, so another nice result that was shown in just the last year is the following. So suppose that we have some state of the CFT with a geometric dual description, and we want to reconstruct a local bulk operator, which is to say we want to find a boundary operator whose action on the dual CFT state reproduces the action of that local operator in the bulk effective field theory. Given a point in the bulk, we can ask, how non-local is its support on the boundary? Can an equivalent CFT operator be supported on a subregion of the boundary sphere instead of being spread out over the entire sphere? So to answer this question, let me define the entanglement wedge. So on a constant time slice, we'll partition the boundary sphere of the CFT to split it into two regions, A and A bar. These regions don't have to be connected. We can divide the boundary however we like. And we label this Ryutaki-Nagi surface of region A as this E sub A. then the entanglement wedge of A is defined as the bulk domain of dependence of the region bounded by A and E sub A. And the upshot of this entanglement wedge reconstruction result is that any local bulk operator inside the entanglement wedge can be reconstructed as a CFT operator with support only on region A. So in short, there's a sort of subregion-subregion duality. So this progress so far, I think, raises two natural questions. Okay, question one is whether in ADS CFT, the entanglement pattern in a state of the boundary CFT is actually an efficient way of organizing the information about the bulk geometry, right? Namely, suppose we're handed a holographic CFT, and suppose we're handed some state in the CFT that we're told has a geometric field description. Then we should be able to read off from it without a priori knowing the answer. Well, I guess first of all, we should be able to read off whether it has a geometric deal at all. And then if so, what is the bulk metric? And if so, what CFT physics is dual to the Einstein equations point by point in the bulk, generalizing the previous argument? So as I've discussed, the Ryota-Kainagi formula allows us to answer these questions around the vacuum. But what about around a more general state? Okay, so the second question may be even more ambitious. We'd like to understand sort of the microscopic meaning of the Ryota-Kainagi formula. And here are some more concrete ways that we can state this question. Right, so first of all, is it true in a general theory of quantum gravity, not necessarily asymptotically ADS, that the entanglement across a region in the effective field theory limit scales with the area of the region? Secondly, right, what degrees of freedom is this area term counting the entanglement of? Right, we expect it to be counting like some UV degrees of freedom that make up the space-time background in some pre-geometric formulation of the theory, but of course nobody knows how to make this precise. Okay. Now, if you believe that string theory is a good theory of quantum gravity, right? How can we define an entanglement there? How can we write down, like for instance, some alpha prime exact version of the Ryota-Kainagi formula? And can we then see how you would recover the Ryota-Kainagi formula in the Einstein gravity limit, including this factor of a quarter? Okay, so the goal of my talk basically is going to be to assess the status of these two questions. So in part one, which is more the main part with the existing results, I'll explain why one needs to generalize the Ryota-Kainagi formula to have a hope of reconstructing the bulk in ADS CFT from entanglement. And I'll show how you can get the areas of non-minimal extremal surfaces from boundary entanglement in a very specific set of examples. And then in part two, I'll briefly explain how the area term seems to be the stringy analog of a certain boundary term that you find when you define entanglement carefully in a gauge theory. And then I'll try to describe how we might take steps towards deriving this area term from string theory. So then this part is more work in progress, and my reason for presenting it is that opinions would be very welcome. Okay, so on to part one. Right, so just to recapitulate, the problem is the following. Given an excited state of a CFT, a holographic CFT with a geometric dual, we want to be able to read off the complete bulk metric from the state, or right, generalize this argument to find the CFT descriptions of the Einstein equations around that state, point by point in the bulk. And the goal is to explore whether the entanglement in the CFT is a useful organizing principle for this information. Right, so concretely, we can ask, does the entanglement first law map to the linearized Einstein equations around more general states? So one zeroth order comment is the following. If we want to be able to read off the bulk metric from the state, right, surely we need some entry of the holographic dictionary that is a functional of the bulk metric with access to every point in the bulk. So as it turns out, the Ryota-Kainagi formula does not have this property that a minimal area surface for some boundary region passes through any given bulk point in a generic asymptotically ADS geometry. This is sometimes called the entanglement shadow. It was discovered numerically. What happens in a generic asymptotically ADS spacetime is the following. So when you compute the Ryutake-Nagi surface for progressively larger regions, the minimal boundary anchored surface sort of bends around a region in the center of the geometry and then jumps over to the other side, omitting a region in the center of order the ADS radius. So the picture here is a numerical example of an ADS star geometry in 2 plus 1 bulk dimensions where this happens. This geometry has no horizons, so it can be made parametrically weakly curved everywhere. So what this tells us is that the position space entanglement entropy in the CFT is not sufficient to reconstruct generic bulk geometries. We need to find some other class of covariant bulk probes that don't have such a shadow. Sorry?
I couldn't hear what you said. What did you say the bulk was there?
You mean the bulk in this picture?
Yes.
It's just like an asymptotically ADS geometry with a star in the center.
So there's some matter in the middle.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
thanks. Okay. So at the same time, our discussion of entanglement so far is certainly incomplete. The Ryutake-Nagi formula it geometrizes the bulk dual to position space entanglements of the maximal subalgebras contained in a region of the boundary. But we can also define entanglement entropy quantifying the ignorance of an observer with access to any subalgebra of operators in our CFT, right? That needs not be organized by position space. In a free field theory, for example, we can ask whether the entanglement of a collection of momentum modes geometrizes. And a natural question is whether any such entanglements of subalgebras can geometrize to areas of codimension two surfaces in the bulk. Okay, so now I'll define entanglement for subalgebras and present one very specific example where the CFT dual of a non-minimal boundary anchored extremal surface is the entanglement of a subalgebra on the boundary CFT. Namely, I'll show it's true for long geodesics in conical defect backgrounds in ADS3. So the first paragraph is what I just said, and here's the definition, right? So any theory we have, we specify by a Hilbert space and some algebra, and then given a state and a subalgebra. We let rho be the unique element of the subalgebra such that it correctly reproduces the expectation values of all the other elements in the subalgebra. Then the entanglement we just define as the von Neumann entropy of this operator. Some comments. First, since rho is an element of the subalgebra, right, we can expand it in a basis for the subalgebra where the rho I's are coefficients. And then the defining condition gives one equation for each unknown. So in general, there's a unique solution. Okay, the second comment is that the entanglement entropy of a subregion in a local QFT is the entanglement entropy of the maximal subalgebra supported on that region. And this is basically true by definition. The reduced density operator that we usually compute is an operator supported on that region that it reproduces all the expectation values, but this prescription here is more general. And third comment is that this definition is rather intractable in an interacting QFT, because of regularization issues. Right, one problem is that we have to enumerate all the operators and their expectation values, and the next problem is that we need to regulate also the size of the Hilbert space. So my approach will be to start from the simplest possible quantum mechanics system and build toy models of more complicated systems out of it. So what's the simplest quantum system? It's just a single spin. Right, so we have the two-dimensional Hilbert space. The operator algebra is the 2x2 matrices spanned by the Pauli matrices. These are good subalgebras because they close under multiplication, and also the Pauli matrices have this property that they're orthogonal. So from these properties, it's very easy to show that for any one of these simple subalgebras, if you take a general 2x2 matrix and expand, the reduced density matrix that reproduces their expectation values is just the projection onto the subalgebra. So that's fact one. And fact two is that the coefficients are proportional to the expectation values of the operators. And these properties obviously generalize to right chains of D-spins that you get from taking the tensor product of that system. Okay, so now I'll switch gears and describe this holographic example where I claim that a feature of bulk geometry can be understood using the entanglement of a non-maximal subalgebra. Okay, so this is the situation. This was first pointed out in a 2014 paper by Vijay Balasubramanian and his collaborators. And the idea is that in ADS3 CFD2, we're going to consider the conical defect geometry ADS3 mod Zn for integer n. So this geometry has a covering space, which is empty ADS with an n times longer circumference. And we can compute any geometric feature in the defect by doing the same thing over all its copies in the covering space. Right, so here is the picture with n equal to 3. Right, so for this boundary region, the red line is the minimal surface. We can compute it by doing the Ryu Takanagi calculation over the three intervals on the cover. And the purple and green lines are non-minimal geodesics that descend from minimal ones in the covering space. It's easy to see that this geometry, first of all, has an entanglement shadow. Remember, this means there's a region in the center of the geometry that no Ryu Takanagi surface passes through. And in the cover, this comes from the fact that we're doing now a Ryu Takanagi calculation over multiple intervals, and there's a phase transition when the intervals go from covering less than half to more than half of the space. Where the surfaces jump from capping off a region to going between them. In the physical defect background, then the surfaces appear to jump across the defect. Also, this the defect labeled by n minus one has the defect labeled by n has n minus one non-minimal geodesics homologous to each interval that descend from the minimal ones in the covering space. And the union of the minimal and non-minimal geodesics has no shadow because the covering space is just an empty ADS. So if we think of this defect geometry as an excited state for quantum gravity in ADS3, we can ask, what is the CFD dual? Right. So naively, this question is intractable since we've just described the state geometrically. So the dual is something in a strongly coupled CFD. We can make it well-defined by embedding the defect into the D1-D5 system and interpolate to the free orbifold point, where the dual CFT becomes a free field theory with this target space, T4 to the n mod the symmetric group of n elements. Right, so to remind you, the D1-D5 system is a top-down construction of ADS3 CFD2, where one finds a moduli space of holographic 2D CFTs, like the one labeled by lambda and n equals 4 super EMLs. And similarly, on one end, gravity is weakly coupled, and we can talk about geometry. On the other end, one reaches a free theory.
Yeah. Is the capital N the N of the gauge group?
Or? The N of the gauge group. So now, just to repeat the question, right? Which state of the free orbifold CFT is the dual of the defect geometry as we interpolate along the moduli space? And the answer turns out to be the ground state in a twisted sector of the CFT with these boundary conditions on the scalars. So groups of little n scalars rotate into one another as you go around the spatial S1. So a convenient way to visualize twisted sectors in orbifold CFTs is to use this long string picture. So a field configuration on this on the target space of the free theory can be thought of as n copies of non-interacting fields valued on m up to the symmetrization. And in the untwisted sector, right, these fields just describe n maps from S1 into m, so we can sort of visualize them as n loops inside the target space. Now, in a twisted sector, the fields rotate into one another as we go around the base space. So the states now describe maps from a fewer number of longer S1s into m. And we can picture these as right, fewer longer loops or long strings in M. So I said that the CFT dual of the bulk conical defect is such a twisted state. So in short, the same n times longer S1 covering space appears in both the defect geometry and in the CFT description of the dual state. So now we conjecture that the covering space construction is protected as we interpolate along the moduli space. In that case, we find that our goal again is to define a CFT dual for the areas of these non-minimal surfaces. The non-minimal surfaces become minimal surfaces in the covering space, which are the entanglements across position space in the covering CFT, which if we go back to the physical CFT, is like the entanglement across a segment of the long string where the segment goes more than once around the S1. So this is not a position space entanglement in the CFT, but an entanglement for some internal degrees of freedom that we have so far defined by engaging part of the gauge group. So my goal now is to show that is to define this quantity in a more manifestly gauge invariant manner. In particular, I want to argue that it's equal to the algebraic entanglement entropy of a gauge invariant subalgebra. Yeah.
So make sure I'm following. The long string is in the target space in CFT, or you can give it.
Right. The long string is in the target space. Right? Right, so it's like when you go around the base space, the fields don't close on themselves, but they close on themselves when you rotate through multiple copies of the fields. So you can think of it as like a single valued. You can think of like multiple scalar fields in your physical theory as like a single valued field in the covering space. Yeah.
So I got a little lost on your on the next page.
On this page.
Do you need a different covering space for each given minimal surface? Because I can consider like arbitrarily high winding number, right? And then so if I want the minimal surface in the covering space, then doesn't that depend on which winding number you're talking about? The non-minimal surface is not unique, right? There's tons of non-minimal surfaces.
Right.
So you choose a covering space that elevates one of them to the minimal surface, or?
But in the end, right. So this covering space is some auxiliary construction. In the end, we really want to talk about physical theory. But to unwind a given minimal surface, it depends. The number of windings of that surface is like the size of the covering space.
I see. Right. So it's
right.
One
right. So that's right. That's right.
Okay.
Right. Okay. So to compute this entanglement, this algebraic entanglement, and sidestep these regularization problems that I discussed earlier, we'll replace the orbifold CFT by a spin chain that captures some of its essential properties. Right, so namely, I'll put the CFT on a lattice, discretize the space into K-cells, and replace the n scalar fields by nk quantum variables. And also, I'll take these variables to be z2 instead of t4 values, so now they're just spins. So this spin model is extremely simple, but it'll still allow us to talk about sort of ungauging a discrete symmetry and comparing it to an algebraic entanglement entropy. Okay, so right, what does this system look like? If we start from the simplest such example, right, then we have just two spins with a z2 gauge symmetry relating them. So we start from the 4D Hilbert space of two spins and we project out the singlet state. Right, in terms of the natural way to write the operators in the two spin Hilbert space, we keep the 9 symmetric combinations. So in short, this is a fancy way to sort of relabel the 9 linearly independent 3x3 matrices that act on a 3-dimensional Hilbert space. Now this basis happens to have this property that 1, 0, and 0 squared forms a subalgebra for any operator in the basis. And in this example, the analog of the entwinement that I defined earlier is the entanglement entropy between the two spins when we lift that state to the 4-dimensional Hilbert space with the z2 constraint removed. Right, so the 4D Hilbert space is like the covering space of the previous example with n equal to 2, where we measure the entanglement between the two halves of a long string that winds, that each wraps the S1 once. So let me run through a very quick example, and this is just a linear algebra exercise. We can consider this family of states, which is a subspace of the three-dimensional physical Hilbert space. Right, pretending that this is a state in the 4D Hilbert space and tracing out the second spin in the usual way, we compute this quantity that I defined to be the entwinement. On the other hand, right, the physical Hilbert space is actually three-dimensional, so we should expand the density matrix for these states. In terms of these 3x3 operators that act on the three-dimensional Hilbert space. So in this basis, this is what this expansion looks like. And now I'll just give you the answer. So we noticed that for the subalgebra generated by the sigma z's, the projection of the global density matrix onto them keeps just the diagonal terms along the density matrix, whose von Neumann entropy reproduces the entwinement. So for this subset of states, the entwinement is the algebraic entanglement entropy of the subalgebra generated by the operators containing the sigma z. If we do the same thing for another subset of states, we find that the entwinement is the algebraic entanglement entropy generated by the subalgebra containing sigma x. So this basically uniquely determines how we would algebraically define the entwinement in this two-spin system, provided that such a definition exists. It must be the entanglement of the subalgebra generated by projecting the global density matrix onto operators of this form, 1 times sigma I plus sigma I times 1. Right, this clearly holds for the examples I did earlier. And it's difficult to think of other prescriptions that would hold for both these examples. Right, so the subalgebra that reproduces the entwinement is generated by these by state-dependent operators. Now, a general state can contain support on multiple such operators with different relative coefficients. And in that case, the generator of our subalgebra, whose entanglement entropy reproduces the entwinement, is the projection of the global density matrix onto all such operators that keeps the information about the relative coefficients. Right, so I guess I'm a bit more careful in my paper, but just to, here's a very hand-wavy quick argument for why this answer is correct. So when we lifted a state from the Hilbert space where we projected out the singlet state to the extended one, but its expansion in terms of the operators is unchanged, right? When we go to the extended space, we're basically adding back in all these non-singlet operators, but a gauge invariant state has no support on them. So the entwinement is like a position space entanglement in the extended Hilbert space. Algebraically, position space entanglement is the projection of the global density matrix onto the maximal subalgebra supported on that region. So in the extended Hilbert space, we're simply projecting the global density matrix onto operators of the form sigma times 1, like the operator supported in a subregion. So the coefficients of these guys in the expansion of rho are the relevant data. And right, in the physical theory, the operators that carry this information come with the symmetrized copy. And the check one has to do is that when we go between all these Hilbert spaces of different dimensions, all your various constants work out, which they do. So that was the simplest possible case. Now, what about a longer spin chain with larger discrete gauge group?
Yeah. We did this extended Hilbert space construction, but was that necessary to define entwinement?
It is necessary to define entwinement in the sense that sort of the operators the operators I project onto, this 1 times sigma plus sigma times 1,
yeah,
is defined, is in some sense, like I labeled these operators with respect to the extended Hilbert space. So I'm going to come back to this point.
Okay, but there's not in principle any way to compute this quantity without listening to the larger.
Indeed, that's right. That's right. Yeah, and I'll come back to this in a second. Right, so... So it should be clear that this argument generalizes immediately, but But indeed, so in this very specific example, the entanglement entropy of a subalgebra, which is not the maximal one in the position space, is due to the area of a non-minimal surface in the bulk. Well, but this example is extremely naive because, first of all, everything trivializes in an auxiliary covering space. And right, second of all, we can't really define the subalgebra without referencing this auxiliary covering space. And also, in the boundary subalgebra is nothing nice in terms of the physical state. So the way I want to think of this is as a proof of principle that entanglement entropies can translate to geometric features in ADS-CFT beyond the Ryu-Takayanagi formula, which is a necessary step for bulk reconstruction. But it's unclear. It's certainly unclear from this example that organizing by the subalgebras of the DOCFT is an efficient way to extract this information. And indeed, if we wanted to conjecture a CFT deal for a more general codimension 2 surface, right, beyond this example, it's not at all clear where one would start, because here we relied heavily on all these auxiliary covering spaces to kind of do the usual thing. So I guess in this direction, the natural next thing that one could do is to study which boundary subalgebras have the property that their algebraic entanglements reproduce the entanglement across a bulk interval in a simpler model of holography, such as the C equals 1 matrix model. But there too, from a very preliminary look at it, this question will have a nice answer, but this question will have an answer, but not like a nicely organized one.
I missed something here. How did you know that the entwinement is defined in the spin model, which is supposed to be like the dual CFT? How did you relate that to non-minimal CFTs?
Right. That's like if you go back to this identifying the two covering spaces.
The two covering spaces being the one in the bulk and the one.
The one in the bulk and the one in the boundary, right?
I see.
So you know how to get from the non-minimal to the minimal. You know how to get from minimal geodesics in the covering space to the non-minimal ones on the boundary in the bulk, and then the rest of the exercise was like an exercise that took place in these spinches.
Okay.
Right. But I think the upshot of this study is it's sort of like a null result. It's not clear that organizing by subalgebras is an interesting way to extract the information. So I guess what I've been doing more lately is trying to understand what bulk principle might underlie the area formula, looking from the point of view of entanglements in the bulk of ADS-CFT instead of entanglements on the boundary. I think this will also shed light on why we might expect entanglements of certain subalgebras in holographic CFTs to geometrize on some more general grounds. So as I mentioned, this is work in progress. There's a calculation I haven't finished doing, and indeed my main reason for presenting this is to kind of maybe like solicit the advice of the audience. Okay, so the idea is that I want to make an analogy between emergent gauge theories and the bulk in ADS-CFT. Right. Now there are many examples of emergent gauge theories in like condensed matter systems where a factorizable UV spin system looks like a gauge theory in the IR. Right. Meanwhile, in quantum gravity, we think that the gravity in the bulk is an IR theory emerging from something different in the UV that we call quantum gravity. So what I want to do here is to compare what happens when you carefully define entanglement in a gauge theory with the bulk side of ADS-CFT. So in gauge theory, when you define entanglement carefully, as people have been doing in the last couple of years, you find that there are various boundary terms. One of them measures classical correlations between UV variables due to the fact that the IR theory is gauged. And I want to argue that the leading area term in the Ryu-Takayanagi formula is such an edge term measuring sort of the classical correlations of stringy degrees of freedom that gravity emerges from. And as such, one should be able to extract it from the world sheet. Okay. So let me first explain how people have been defining entanglement in gauge theories. Right, so the setting usually is a lattice gauge theory. Gauge theories, of course, don't factorize. So we need to do something beyond the usual partial trace. So one idea that has been shown to agree with replica trick is what's called the extended Hilbert space prescription. This is work by Donnelly, and indeed my presentation in the next three slides will sort of follow the exposition of his paper. So the idea is, if we're given a subregion in a state of a gauge theory, we want to embed our Hilbert space in the minimal larger Hilbert space that does factorize across the region by lifting the gauge symmetry along the boundary and of the entangling region, and then define the EE to be the usual thing in the extended Hilbert space. Namely, all right, we just compute the reduced density matrix with respect to the extended Hilbert space and compute the von Neumann entropy. So when we do this, we find that the entanglement will contain various boundary or edge terms that measure kinematic correlations between the two regions due to gauge constraints. Okay, so let me show this by some examples. So the simplest possible example is if we just have a U1 gauge theory on an S1. So in that case, in this case, or this is a very simple theory, the gauge invariant algebra contains just one canonically conjugate pair of stuff, which is the holonomy and the electric field, which is constant by the Gauss's law around the circle. A good basis for the Hilbert space are the eigenstates of the electric field. And now to define the entanglement across an interval, we'll follow the recipe. So we'll define the extended Hilbert space to be the Hilbert space you get from doing a gauge fixing, but where you've lifted the gauge symmetry on the two endpoints of your interval. And if you do this, it turns out the minimal way to do it is to double the Hilbert space. So given any state of the U1 gauge theory, we can embed it in this extended Hilbert space and then turn the crank. And this term at the bottom is what we find. This result is not quantum in the sense that everything is diagonal. In fact, it's just the classical probability distribution of the state that we started from over the electric field eigenstates. So the idea is that in this system, the electric field operator in one interval and in the other are always going to be perfectly correlated, just due to the Gauss law. This is like a classical constraint that you could have seen just by staring at the Lagrangian. But it sort of resembles entanglement in that a measurement we do on one interval tells us something about the state of the other one. And that's what we're measuring here. Okay, so next, a more sophisticated example. Suppose that instead of electrodynamics, we now put Yang Mills with gauge group with some gauge group or gauge group UN on the circle. So the gauge variant building blocks are still just the gauge field and the electric field, but the gauge invariant algebra is a bit more complicated and now contains Wilson loops in every representation and all the Casimirs you can build out of your electric field. So you can show from a careful gauge fixing that a basis for the Hilbert space is labeled by the representations of G. This is not obvious, but you can show it. And when we want to compute the entanglement by following this recipe, we're again going to extend the Hilbert space by repeating the gauge fixing with the gauge symmetry lifted at two endpoints. From an operator point of view, roughly what we're doing is we want to allow Wilson loops in all representations to end along the entangling surface. And we can do this by adding surface charges in every representation at the endpoints. So we assign a subspace of size dim R squared to each state R. And now we can go ahead and compute the entanglement in the extended Hilbert space. And when we do this, we're going to find it's the sum of two terms. One is the same term we saw before, which is the distribution of our state over the eigenstates R. And now there's a second term that's measuring the fact that these surface charges in this extended Hilbert space have to be perfectly correlated for these Wilson line operators we added to form loops, so that our states are actually gauge invariant. A comment about the most general case, if we looked at a lattice gauge theory in D greater than two dimensions, and did this entanglement computation, we would find that the EE is the sum of a distillable EE between interior degrees of freedom plus these two types of boundary terms that I've just shown you. Okay, so now how should we interpret this operation of extending the Hilbert space? So I think this is clearest if you think of having started from an emergent gauge theory, or if you like a theory where you started with a global symmetry and got to the gauge theory by gapping up the non-singlet states. In that case, the extended Hilbert space is just your physical UV Hilbert space. So what I call the Shannon term, the first kind of edge term, measures the correlations between your IR operators, your gauge invariant operators due to the Gauss law, as I showed in the first example. And what I call this log dr edge term measures the correlations between your UV degrees of freedom due to the fact that you have this gauge symmetry in the IR. Okay, so another comment, right? So like earlier in this talk, I gave you this algebraic definition of entanglement entropy, right? Where given some subalgebra that you specify ahead of time, it's the von Neumann entropy of the element of the subalgebra that reproduces all the expectation values of operators in it. So it turns out that that on a lattice, the algebraic entanglement entropy for the maximal gauge invariant subalgebra supported on a region of the lattice differs from the extended Hilbert space definition by the log dr term. And I think this is not surprising, since the log dr term measures the correlations between like sort of these gauge variant UV operators that you added to your Hilbert space, right? Whereas this algebraic definition for some subalgebra of gauge invariant operators captures both types of terms, governing those degrees of freedom. Okay, and now I want to make an analogy between lattice gauge theory and the bulk side of ADS CFT. So in ADS CFT, Dan Harlow showed in his latest paper that the Ryu Takayanagi area term plus its 1 over n correction is equivalent to the entanglement wedge reconstruction that I described at the beginning of the talk. And he showed this using a sort of algebraic language. So on the left-hand side, this is his definition of the R2 term plus the 1 over n correction. The entanglement in a region A of the CFT equals the Ryu Takayanagi area term plus the algebraic entanglement entropy of the gauge invariant operators contained in the entanglement wedge. And on the right-hand side, we have the statement that that these two regions, the region A and the CFT and the entanglement wedge, are equivalent in bulk effective field theory in the sense that any operator contained in the entanglement wedge can be reconstructed on region A. So we're just going to take the EE of both sides, right? And we find that and use the extended Hilbert space definition for the entanglement wedge on the grounds that the bulk emerges from our string theory, however we want to define it. So the entanglement of region A in the CFT is the entanglement across the entanglement wedge in this lattice definition, which is the algebraic entanglement plus our log dr edge term. And then we're just naively going to cancel the common stuff and conclude that the area term is a log dr type edge term if we think of the bulk as an effective gauge theory. Now I said that before that I think that the correct way to interpret the log dr edge term is that it counts classical correlations between your UV degrees of freedom that your IR gauge theory emerges from. So provided that the analogy doesn't qualitatively break down, I think this suggests that the area term canonically counts some classical string degrees of freedom and should be extractable from a string rule sheet calculation without having to use the replica. So I'm going to finish up with three very speculative slides. So first, what is the area term counting? So this is sort of just some philosophy that I'll try to define better on the next slide. Right, so in the bulk, when we define entanglement along a bulk extremal surface, we're partitioning a string background into two halves. Now, naively, we think that string theory contains extended objects, like closed strings, that can lie across this bulk partition. So let's make an analogy to the gauge theory, right? There also, your your gauge invariant operators are similarly, they're extended objects on the lattice, like Wilson loops. When we cut the lattice along an entangling surface, the extended Hilbert space prescription suggests that there's a UV sector of the Hilbert space where the Wilson loops can in fact end on the surface, and the log dr term is counting the correlations between like these microscopic constituents of the Wilson loop due to the IR gauge symmetry. Right, and this is perfectly precise if you think of the gauge theory as emerging from something that factorizes in the UV, and then the extended Hilbert space is just the physical Hilbert space. Right, so similarly, by sort of a naive analogy, I think what this work on entanglement in ADS-CFT tells us is that the Hilbert space of non-perturbative string theory contains a sector of states where closed strings have sort of split into open ones along entangling surfaces, and A over 4G Newton is like counting their Chin-Patrick. Okay, so this is great, but it's all philosophy. So the real test is whether we can actually get this number from some sort of worksheet calculation. Right, the picture I sketched on the previous slide is that in the Lorentzian entanglement wedge, it comes from some Chin-Patton factors of a new open string sector that we don't know anything about. But now suppose that your modular Hamiltonian generates a geometric flow, right? So i.e. you're considering the ADS Rindler decomposition. Now we can analytically continue the boundary state and extract this alpha prime exact information from the Euclidean worksheet in the dominant Euclidean saddle. Right, so naively, if we take the ADS radius to infinity, the dominant Euclidean saddle is just Euclidean Rindler, which is flat space, where the spring sphere partition function vanishes. On the other hand, if we sort of take this bulk cartoon seriously, where we have this sector of open strings ending on the entangling surface, and take the bulk continuation of the cartoon, this picture suggests that there will be a non-vanishing sphere partition function in the dominant Euclidean saddle coming from like closed strings that wrap the tip of the cigar. So now an interesting fact is that we indeed have an exact worksheet CFT for a Euclidean cigar-like string background, which is this SL2 Maji 1 coset CFT. And in recent studies of the torus partition function in the elliptic genus of the CFT, Givan and Itzhaki found that that it seems to contain extra states relative to what you would find for like the flat space worksheet CFT, even if you take the large K limit where the cigar naively flattens out into a flat space. So to put some concrete equations to this story that I've shown you, I need to compute this S2 partition function. So this is work in progress. And I guess indeed I would like to talk to the experts who know more about these things than I do. Right. So to summarize, again, the last three slides were speculative, but I think it would be interesting to further study this idea that the Ryu-Takanagi term is the log dr boundary term in a entanglement calculation. Right. Also, we can now return to the question of what is needed to derive the Einstein equations around general asymptotically ADS backgrounds in ADS CFT. Right from this point of view that the area terms are edge terms for bulk entanglement, right? So now if we want to repeat the derivation of the Einstein equations, really what we have to do is generalize this subregion duality, and then the fact that the entanglement of these boundary subalgebras will give you the areas of bulk regions will come along for the ride. So I guess for the experts, we can map the Einstein equations to the entanglement first law by modifying Ted Jacobson's version of Mark's argument for small balls in the book. But yeah, let me just stop here.
Sorry, I think I couldn't hear you very well at the end. You were trying to return to the question of the general Einstein's equations around arbitrary states. And so how did you tie that up? How does the string theory entanglement in the bulk relate to the Einstein equations?
So there's an argument floating around in the literature that wants to say if you assume the entanglement across the UV degrees of freedom in a general state in quantum gravity, scales as the area of a region, then you can show by applying the entanglement first law directly to the bulk to a bulk region that it maps to the Einstein equations. So I think this argument is more natural if you apply it directly to the bulk instead of trying to pull it onto the boundary.
I see. Is it something like just something you get from black hole physics that the first law is derived from Einstein's equation, but you can also go backwards?
No, it's not quite that.
Okay.
Right. You want to apply the first law for like a for like a small ball in a smooth region of space.
I
can tell you about the reference.
Okay.
So you were talking about the idea of like splitting the closed string of free space into two open strings.
Yeah.
Is it really possible in invisible string theory? So what kind of like, I guess you need to relax some, well, as you said, you need to relax some language. Well, you first need to kind of relax the level matching of the closed string to free space. Satisfy the level matching, but open strings are not. So,
right, yeah, I guess
I what you really need to do.
It's not at all clear what I need to do in the Lorentzian picture. I think there's a somewhat more well-defined conjecture in right if you go to this Euclidean picture where you have only the closed strings.
Okay. Yeah. So,
I mean, there's a very naive. I mean, it's not very practical, but there's a naive definition you could try to give entanglement in some features by computing the partition function in the replicated geometry. I don't know how these relates to what you're saying.
Right. I think that, the thing is, I don't want to compute the entanglement entropy. I want to compute just this boundary term, which I believe is canonically copies of the instrument theory. So I guess I want to avoid the replica term.
But because you think the replica is not valid, or?
No, I think the replica trip will give you the full entanglement entropy.
Yeah.
But I want to argue that the term that happens to dominate at leading order in G Newton is sort of a term that's counting something in classical string theory. It's like it just happens to be one component of
classical means a sphere.
Classical means a sphere diagram. Sphere diagram.
Yeah.
So I think you should be able to get it from a sphere diagram in some suitably defined background without doing
replica. So that should agree with doing the replica.
At the leading order in G, yes. Yes.
Thank you very much.